I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. Well, hello there, yes. It is always a fair question here on Vic Cohen's It's a Fair Question. I just happen to be with, I mean, it's shocking, right? I happen to be Vic Cohen. And this is the show where, well, I'm going to ask just about anything because there is no question that is ever too personal or off limits. And if you've been listening to the show for a while, thank you so much. If you haven't, if you're kind of a newer listener or viewer, please subscribe to iTunes and you can catch all the episodes. There's over 60 of them. One of the things I love about this show is that I have had the good fortune of meeting some amazing people here in Los Angeles over my 20-some years living here. And our guest today is no exception. This guy is truly an amazing... Please welcome Joey Feldman. I don't know who I'm saying welcome. You got to applaud at home. Yeah. How are you, Joey?
Good, man. How are you?
I am so excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
When you agreed to do this, I was just thrilled because, first of all, you and I haven't really visited in a while, and it was a great opportunity for us to have a one-on-one that we haven't had probably in years.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. And you have such an incredible story, not only about your professional life, but your personal life. It's so inspiring, and it's so exciting that I just had to share you with all of my friends.
Well, thank you. So, I'm here to be shared.
There's plenty of you to go around.
Yeah, there is.
Now, the first thing I want to say when you were setting up, I looked at you and I was thinking you're kind of like a smaller version of Richard Gere, a little bit. Do people ever tell you they see that in your face?
Yes. A lot of women have.
Honestly.
Yeah, yeah, 100% honest. And a lot of men have told me, and they've also told me I look like him if he ate a lot of donuts.
And was a little shorter.
Yes.
Well, you're a handsome man.
Thank you.
I understand you've got a lady in your life.
I do have a lady in my life.
Well, congratulations on that, because when I met you, you had nothing.
Yeah, I know.
Literally.
Yes.
But we're going to get to that in a minute. Now, over the years, the 7 years you've been here in LA since you arrived in Philly, mm-hmm. you've kind of become a name. I mean, your art's really taking off, isn't it?
I would say so, yeah. I definitely have been working. I support myself through my art exclusively. So, yeah.
So great to hear. Now, just so everyone, all of you can have an opportunity to see, if you're watching, I want you to show them some of your art. You brought three pieces with you.
Yeah, I brought a couple pieces.
Why don't you show them on camera, and
sure.
I'll describe them to all of you who aren't watching on video. Joey is kind of known for, I would say it's almost like a cartoonish, and that's not a negative, it's the style of a lot of celebrity. And the first one here is Vic Cohen. No. That's Bowie.
That's David Bowie.
David Bowie, and that was in memory, would you say? I mean, that was after his death?
Yeah, that piece was made, and then I made prints of it. A lot of people had asked me, because they wanted the piece. I did it just because,
You're a fan?
Fan of David Bowie, and very inspirational, and he passed away, and I drew him. So people got in touch with me and said, hey, will you make a print of it?
Are these limited editions?
These are all limited editions.
Now, I had a friend once. No, let me finish
one
that.
Time.
That's it. That's all I got to say. No, I had a friend once, and he did this thing where he said he was selling stuff. It wasn't an artist, mm-hmm. but it was limited edition. And I said to him, well, what's the limit? And he laughed and smiled and goes, we don't know. So it was like a con.
Right.
Like it could go on forever.
Yeah, I do print runs specifically with numbers because I'm a little OCD that always work for me. So I usually do 12 and 12. I do 12 special editions and 12 regular editions.
What's the difference between a special and a regular?
The regular will usually have some type of hand embellishment. Like with the Bowie, the red Aladdin Saint.
So each one is a little different.
Yeah. So people that don't want to shell out for an original piece of art, they can get an original hand embellished print. So it's different.
Okay. What does that cost?
Usually about $85, $100.
That's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
And is it hand signed?
The everything is embossed. It's embossed with my logo, my emblem.
But don't they want to have your original?
And I sign it.
Okay,
I sign
so it's an original signature.
You always get an original signature on
That's
it.
Fresh so on that
official.
Print. Not
Absolutely.
A copy of it.
Okay, no
that's
copy
cool.
of it.
Let's see another piece of art.
So this is Dave Grohl.
Okay, cool. So for those who don't know Dave Grohl, tell us about him. There might be some who don't.
Dave Grohl. Well, if you don't, you've been under a rock. He was in Nirvana, a little band called Nirvana.
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him. And now he's in the Foo Fighters, and he's just a cool dude.
And what and was the inspiration?
That was his birthday. I woke up and I read the news. It said Dave Grohl's birthday, so I did it. And people said, hey, can you do a print? So I did a print and I sold the print
out. Who are these people?
Who are
it's
these
your mom.
People?
It's
yeah.
your mom.
Yeah. No, no, no.
Joey, can you do Dave for me? I nailed it, right? Okay, go on.
Yeah. You're pretty close, man. I've spent a lot of time in therapy listening to that.
Good.
Facebook followers, Instagram followers, you know, social media.
Usually I do this at the end, but if any of you watching want to find you right away, how do they do that?
www.joeyfeldman.com.
J-O-E-Y-F-E-L-D-M-A-N.
Yeah. And okay. then there's a section on the left-hand side that says prints for sale.
But like the David Bowie, you said you sold out in house.
That
how
sold
quickly?
Out. It was about 24 hours.
And that's 30. It? It's done?
That's it. Yeah. I've been asked to do more. Now, the thing with the Bowie thing is I also donated some of the money towards the City of Hope, which is a cancer research center.
Okay.
Because Bowie had passed away from cancer.
That's nice.
And, you know, because there was a couple people out there that said, oh, you're making some money
there's
off
always
of the
gonna
death
be, it doesn't matter what it is. You
it
can do
matter.
Anything
yeah.
and you're going to have someone be critical.
I try to put the do not disturb sign off on those people and just do my thing. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. So. Meaning you just can't listen to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. Let's see the, I know- okay. We are. He's got so many of them. And after you show me this one, I want to talk about that controversial Eminem piece of art you did.
Okay. This is Leonard Nimoy.
I love this. I think this is fantastic. Now, if you know, Leonard Nimoy recently, well, he passed away in the last year.
Yeah. You can see all of these online if it was pretty fast on there. You know, just real quick, though, online, you know, I work 22 by 30 is the size paper I use. So when you see it online, it looks a little bit smaller on your phone. So that's the original. Right
tell
there.
Me about the Eminem controversy.
Years ago, I got asked to do an illustration of Eminem for XXL magazine.
What is that?
It's a hip hop magazine.
Really? I was thinking it's for just fat guys.
No.
We're double XLs.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Big Jeff, fat yeah. pun. And all that. Well, anyway, so I did this illustration. It was when Eminem's mother was suing him and he was smacked with a lawsuit.
Okay.
So I drew a picture of his mom who supposedly, and I don't know any of this, was sort of like trailer trash. This is what the art director told me.
Okay.
And I had Eminem in a diaper and the mother was hitting him with an XL.
I saw it online. I loved it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So he wound up rapping about it.
About the piece of art.
Yeah. I remember laying in bed on the Marshall Mathers album and he was talking about XXL, the drawing and all that stuff. And that was pretty cool.
Did he mention your name?
No, not directly, but he talks about the artwork
have you
and
met
the
him?
Feud. I have met him, yeah.
Have you ever offered to do any other art for him? And,
no.
And you guys have a connection?
We spoke very briefly, but there was no, you know.
What was the conversation like?
Hey, man, what's up?
That's it?
Yeah.
What was the lyric in the song about? Like, what did he say about the piece of art you made?
Just, he was like, XXL. I can't remember exactly, but it's on there. A lot of people know it when you start singing it. I'm not a huge Eminem fan, so I didn't even realize. You
okay,
know?
Jeremy, did you have something know something about this?
I was just letting you know I have the artwork on the screen if you wanted the viewers to be able to see it.
Yeah, let's do that. Put that up. That's awesome. Jeremy,
yeah,
you're
it, right
amazing.
There.
Wow, I love that. I love that Jeremy... Jeremy is, this is his studio.
He hooked it up.
He gives
man.
Us the benefit of working with him. And he's actually turning into an amazing producer too. He just whipped that up. That's great. Thanks, Jeremy. There it is. And you can find out some more history on that online, right? But that's pretty much the story.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, and how long ago was that?
That was maybe 15 years ago. And then they brought it back. Because it was the number one greatest feud ever that magazine ever had with a rapper.
It's the only feud they had.
Yeah.
No one
which was
that.
Good because I got paid again for it. But,
oh, that's good.
Know.
Do you get paid every time it's printed?
Every time somebody uses it or asks for permission to use it.
Now, when I met you 7 years ago, you were fresh from Philadelphia. You had a pretty wild haircut.
Yes.
You cut yourself down there. You look like a little more professional.
Like a mensch.
You do.
Yeah.
I would take you home to my mother.
Okay, good.
I mean, I'm straight, but
yeah, I understand.
Know.
Yeah. Parents love me.
I bet they do.
Yeah.
I would imagine just everyone else, except the person who said you need to give money to the cancer.
Exactly.
That guy or lady wasn't so happy.
Right.
But you came out here with nothing.
Pretty much
nothing. Savings 7 years ago?
I had about $4,000. I sold everything I had, including all my collectibles, my Wolverine claws, everything. And I was miserable. And my friends and I had talked about coming out to LA and I came out here and visited. And as I was flying in, I said, I got to move out here. This is like my spiritual home.
I'm just checking something in my camera.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is. Okay. I was popping off camera. Come
so I went back to Philly and I set a date. I sold everything pretty much I had. I went around my house and I touched everything. And if it didn't feel right, I put it on Craigslist or in the yard sale. And I set a date and I moved out here not knowing what I was going to do. And I shipped out 15 boxes of my belongings from FedEx and I started over again.
Jeremy, is everything okay? Do we have a problem?
I was going to adjust this camera.
Oh, great. Thank you. That's okay. Oh, yeah. There we go. Okay. I was out from the art. Okay, cool. Now Jeremy's playing stagehand and cameraman. Guy's good. Thank you, Jeremy, because he knows I'd be so annoyed later. Yes. I'd be looking at the video and going, you know, next time you can walk right in. It's fine.
Right.
That's how it is. It's better to be live and real. It's not perfect. It's like life. So
there's no mistakes.
No, everything, it was meant to be.
Exactly.
So thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy's gotten more airtime in the first 10 minutes.
It's great.
He's a good guy. So you come out here with $4,000.
Yeah.
You had 15 boxes of crap.
I mean, clothes.
Okay. You know, I saw your clothes back then. Crap.
Yeah, crap. You know, stuff to get me by. And I bought a car off of Craigslist, a Honda.
Okay.
For like a $1,500 bucks. Hondas.
Okay.
Yeah, Honda Civic. It was great. And then I just started doing odd jobs, whatever I could do to stay here.
Well, I remember you were doing... I always thought, I didn't realize you were an artist like where people would hang things up, you know, pieces of art. Like,
right.
I guess you call that figurative art. Is that right?
I'm technically like an illustrator cartoonist.
Okay.
You know, you could call me a fine artist because, you know, like what is art? You know, we could have, that's a whole other podcast.
But the medium is, what do you use?
I like pen and ink.
And what kind of, is this regular ink or do you use oils also? Or?
Never. Oils I don't have time for because they take a long time to dry.
You have the patience.
I have no patience, exactly.
Because you have like ADD kind of?
You think?
But it's hard, isn't that, as an artist?
It's not once you get into the zone, but if you're stuck where I am right now in the technological addiction,
right,
where I can't not like look, because I'm so important that the world needs me every day. I have to look at my phone every 10 minutes.
Well, the good news is you were very quick in responding to any of my texts or anything.
Well, exactly. Because I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting for something to pop through.
I love it. Don't change.
Yeah.
So you come to Philadelphia from Philadelphia. No, is the accent Philadelphia?
The accent is, people have told me I have an accent.
Something.
I don't think I do.
People say to me, Vic, are you from the East Coast?
Right.
And I think it's only because they think I'm Jewish.
Right.
Or know I'm Jewish. Like, they think that that must be it. Like, and they'll say I'm from Chicago, and they go, yeah, East Coast. It's like, no, that's not the East Coast.
Now, because they know you're Jewish, they ever ask if you've had a tail?
No, I've never had that.
I had somebody from West Virginia ask
here?
Me. Yeah. No, about it on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's.
He said, hey, man, do you really have a tail?
What do you?
No, I don't.
What about the horns?
I shaved them down. That's why I had the long hair. But now they're not growing back.
So you came out here to start a new life. I remember when you were painting, it was like you're doing some restaurant work.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot the chain. What was the name of that? Pon something or whatever?
Le Pen, and, LPQ.
And I thought that you were, and it's a chain out here. If you've never been, I love it.
They're actually on the East Coast.
Oh, really?
Now.
They're very French. Le Pen, blah, blah, blah.
The Cotien or some shit like
that. They're known for their breads, Baker's baked goods, and they put out Nutella and jam. And the thing that's great is it's Nutella. The thing that's not great is that anyone can keep double dipping and because they don't change it every time a new table comes up.
Oh, is that how that works?
It's there all day.
I don't know. I've eaten there like once.
I love it. Oh, really? Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
So you're not doing that anymore. Was that
I was doing like contracting, like decorative painting and faux finishing.
That's what I thought of you.
It
was more of like
stuff.
A guy who was doing homes and restaurants.
Well, you know what, man? People thought I sold real estate. People thought I was a writer. There was all kinds of things. And then, you know, what had happened was I was sort of in a funk because I had just moved. I never moved across country before.
Had you only lived in Philadelphia?
I only lived in Philly.
Did you go to college
life.
There?
College? Come on, man.
Never went to college.
State Penn. I went to art school for 2 weeks.
Hold on a second though.
Yeah.
Your name's Joey Feldman.
Yes.
And you're, like you said, you're a mensch.
Yeah.
If you're Jewish, it's stereotypical, but
right.
Jewish boys named Feldman,
yeah,
they know they're going to college. That's just
part of the plan. Well, that wasn't my family. Listen, I'm Jew-ish.
Right.
Right. Now my father's family was actually Orthodox. You know,
okay.
But the deal was I was an only child. Our family wasn't the most well-to-do. And
what did your dad do?
He was a painter. He was a house painter. He taught he taught me how to paint houses like since I've been 8 years old.
Okay.
And, you know, they just wanted me to graduate high school. there was no, because I was failing miserably at everything. But I did go to art school after my father passed away for a little bit.
Do you feel that the reason you weren't doing well scholastically is because you had this ADD that no one knew about?
It is possible. I just didn't like school. Like, I'm easier at picking stuff up than sitting there and being taught to.
So experientially learning versus taking a pen and paper and listening to a lecture.
Right.
That's not your thing.
No, it's difficult for me. And you know, I don't know. I've never technically been diagnosed. Somebody told me that I had mild Asperger's in the last couple of years.
Really? That's so weird.
Right.
You don't want to hear that.
I kind of like it though.
Really? Because
because that gives me like an answer to what's wrong with me.
No, because maybe I'm wrong, but I thought Asperger's means you're like socially kind of like awkward. You say the wrong things. You insult people when you don't mean
to. Well, I've been known to do that. I mean,
you're like, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, okay. It's more of just like what you were saying. I take a class on drawing. I could sit there and the teacher can tell me a million things. And like 5 minutes later, I'm like, what did I just learn? Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing. So, I have to repeat. I have to do it. And it takes me long for me to learn.
Now, I noticed the work I've seen is figures. It's, it's people, faces, parts mm-hmm. of body. Do you do landscapes? Do you do objects like, the traditional, fruit bowl or anything
I
like
do
that?
I have sketchbooks filled with just me sketching almost anything. And landscapes are the next thing that I want to do. Architecture is more like I want to, I love ruling lines.
I want to
like
see that work because, I mean, I think your work is amazing
and
it's fun, and it's celebrity. And I, celebrity is a certain taste. Like some people either like it or they don't, or mm-hmm. they have but landscape as a whole, I think it's more broad.
Right.
It's more classic. Like, are you in any museums?
No.
Except when you walk into MoCA.
Right.
There you are.
There I am.
That's about it.
Or LACMA.
Well, is MoCA right?
MoCA. Well, that's the, there's a MoMA.
Okay.
I think they're a Museum of Contemporary Art. Yeah, you're right.
I had a MoCA earlier. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
But I predict really big things.
Okay, great.
I honestly do.
Thank you.
I think you've got something that's really special. Now, I want to talk about early in life. Now, and we've kind of started to get there because when I met you 7 years ago, your life was in a very big transition. I would say more so than just a guy moving from Philadelphia to start a new life in LA. Let's talk a bit about some of your struggles around addiction and how you were able to turn that around. But first, I want to know, what was going on early in life that got you, led you to addiction? I mean, describe your early years in addiction. What was going on?
Well, I was always the short, fat kid. People picked on me. I was an only child, and I just never felt like I fit in. There's kids that used to beat me up, and those kids that beat me up, I started drinking with because I realized that I was addicted to people's approval at that point.
Well, it's your survival.
Well, yeah, it was exactly.
I mean, if you're gonna get beat up.
Sure. So I drank with them. I did other stuff and that progressed. And I really liked it because that was my solution to feeling the way that I would feel. Like, life sometimes for me is way too much. Like, I don't know about you, but getting up in the morning.
Yeah.
Putting your pants on, shaving. Too much.
Oh,
man.
You put your pants on?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen some of the videos. But, it's like, it's too much. So in order to,
are you talking about depression?
I'm not talking about depression. I'm talking about being anywhere except in the present moment.
Okay.
It's just, it's a lot, it's a lot. And I would medicate.
How old are we talking?
We're talking from 11, 12, 13.
You had your first drink. What was it?
It was a whiskey sour. Was it a bar mitzvah? No, that's not true. That's my first drink. I did drink beer.
Well, what kind of beer?
Rolling Rock.
Okay, you say
in
it like
a
that.
Shed.
Is that a bad beer? Because I think of like Old Milwaukee as kind of, or Schlitz is not very high end.
All I know is I didn't like the taste of it, but I drank it anyway because everybody dared me to.
In a shed.
In a shed, yes.
And what's the significance of that?
We were just hanging out and we were, that was like, where we were being bad kids in a shed.
Now, was this a middle class school, all white? Was it mixed? Who was beating you up?
Catholic school kids. They were great. They used to call me Jewy was my nickname.
Cute.
And they'd say, yeah, there's Jewy. Let's get him. And they would just beat me up to a pulp. But
and then you'd get drunk with them.
And then I'd get drunk with them. Yeah.
And they stopped beating you up.
Yeah. And then pretty soon, though, you know, people weren't beating me up. And I would just move from friends to friends. I'd kind of camouflage and blend in with everybody. But I never really had any best friends.
But it started at 11 with Rolling Rock.
Yes, that's correct.
Did you go to junior high or middle school drunk? Were you drinking alone ever at that point?
I did, a couple times I did, but I started smoking pot alone by myself a lot.
And when was that?
That was like in around like 13, 14.
But it wasn't a problem, right? I mean,
no, I mean, I would just get high before class and go eat some pizza, just be stoned. And then, just started taking pills. I was in a car accident. So I was prescribed medication. I got,
what was
like,
that?
Like Percocets, 1986. I was in a car accident.
So how, well, that
I was 16.
Okay. You're getting older then.
Yeah. Getting
so
older.
So nothing, no real, cost at this point.
No, just, you know, separation and, you know, from parents. And then I became like the uncontrollable child. You know, I became the kid who was, Mom, may I have $20? Mom, I need $20. Mom, if you don't give me $20, I'm going to burn the house down.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you needed it because you were a drug addict?
And also I was addicted to stealing. I would go in my parents' pocket wallet and stuff like that. And I would just steal and just... You know, I was always asked when I was a kid, what is wrong with him? I always did stuff. I don't know if it was for like attention or negative attention, but I was just always the kid, like, what is wrong with him?
What's interesting is you were an only child, so it's not as if you were competing with siblings for attention. So were your parents very self-involved?
My parents worked a lot. My grandmother pretty much raised me. But, you know, my father did the best he could. He worked a lot. He made sure I had a toy every Friday. And my mom, I always, you know, we don't have the greatest relationship.
Are they alive today?
My father passed away, actually. I was out one night. I was really high and drunk. And I came home. And my father was acting kind of strange. And I wound up going with him to the hospital while I'm wasted, mind you. And I...
Driving drunk?
No. My friend had dropped me off. I called 911. I went with my father to the hospital. Yeah. And my mom waited for her sister. And my father pretty much died in my arms while I was wasted. And...
How old were you?
19. And, you know, it was... I was 19. And that's what I don't give myself a lot of credit for. I was a kid, you know?
It was a heart attack?
We still sort of don't know. We think it might have been the medicine that was given to him, but then the hospital lost his medical information. There's a whole thing, but I was 19. I didn't know what was going on. I disappeared for a few days. I was angry.
After that?
Yeah. You know, and that was sort of like the catalyst for me to get into the carpool lane of addiction because I had been working at a job at a place called Crazy Eddie's. Selling stereo equipment.
This is a guy who's insane on the air.
Yeah, everything and anything in home entertainment. And you can watch the commercials and all. But anyway, I met these older guys.
This is downtown Philly?
Not downtown, northeast Philadelphia. And I would, you know, I met these older guys working there and they were all doing cocaine. So like 16 years old, I'm doing coke. And I'm going out. And then, you know, I had this great schedule.
At work?
Sure, of course, at like, work. You look at me like there's something wrong. You know,
that sounds crazy.
It's Crazy Eddie's.
Good answer.
No, it was great.
That was
man.
Perfect. Right on the money.
I had the perfect schedule.
How could you afford that?
I was making good money. I was a really good salesman.
What were you selling?
I was 16 years
TVs?
Old. No, I was selling car stereos and extended service contracts.
That's where the money was, right? Contracts.
Yeah, the contracts. And I did a really good job. But here's the problem was I wasn't going to be able to work there full time because I was failing high school miserably. So here's how I graduated high school. I went into the vice principal who said, you're not going to pass, you're not going to graduate. And I went back to my boss and I said, Larry, I'm not going to be able to work here. And he said, we'll go in and talk to her and see what she needs. So I sat down with her and it turns out the vice principal, disciplinarian, she needed a Walkman and a VCR. I got it for her and I graduated on time, man.
Oh, man, that's how it works. That's the Philly way.
Philly, man, that's it.
Crazy. It's crazy anyway.
That's it.
So when you say you're doing coke, because it's like... Honestly, I'm like, I'm not going to pretend like I'm Mr. Goody Two Shoes, but I was scared shitless of drugs. Like,
I love drugs and just keep giving them to me.
Weren't you afraid of dying?
No, no. I was afraid of living. That's why I was taking the drugs.
Well, what about that? You know, remember the This Is Your Brain on Drugs? And they show those eggs.
Oh, I would laugh at that. Come on, man. And the whole Nancy Reagan thing, just saying, it was just say no thank you. Yeah, I mean, we would just laugh. You know, because you're having a good time and it's fun, and you don't realize, like, it's actually, when you're in addiction, you're holding sand in your hand, and you know how sand disappears, the grains, and you don't realize that's going on. And especially, I'm a young kid. I don't know.
I don't get the sand in your hands thing. How's that like addiction?
Everything starts to disappear, just like the sand.
You think you've got something.
You're holding on to, you can't really hold on to a lot of sand.
Right,
eventually.
And what is the sand representing? Your whole life?
Sure.
Relationships?
Everything.
Your integrity?
Everything goes out. When you're caught up in addiction, like, all bets are off.
So, like, I'm trying to paint a visual in my head on this. So, like, you're Crazy Eddie's, you're 16 and you're doing coke. Were you guys doing it, like, blatantly, like, in the break room between customers?
Yeah. Like, hey, man, go back. There's the Cure CD. And if you look real closely, there's a line there for you. So you go back, you do a line, and you come out, and then you go back 15 minutes later.
Where the hell was Eddie?
And then I worked at, he wasn't at the store.
Everybody needed to pay better attention.
Everybody was on drugs at the time. Everybody.
Well, at that store.
I don't think
that everyone in the world.
No, I don't. Well, it's possible.
I wasn't. So everyone but me.
Yeah.
So you're doing this Crazy Eddie job.
The Crazy Eddie.
And then you graduate.
Graduated.
And then your father passed away in your arms. But you're saying it really got to a dangerous level after your father died?
Yeah, because then, you know, New Jack City came out. I was smoking crack, cooking the coke. I had got another job.
Hold on. Who taught you? Like, how do you even learn how to cook crack?
Well, some of the guys that I hung out with were very curious, and they were really into their drugs.
These guys from Crazy Eddie's?
No, these were guys outside of Crazy. My crew, my buddies.
Who were these guys? Were these, like, Jewish middle-class guys like yourself from your high school? Were these inner-city guys?
Were these guys with criminal records?
Suburbs,
real nice family, nice kids, you know.
And they're they knew how to... let me ask you something. I'm going to sound really naive.
Okay.
What is the difference, like, crack? Is that, like, if you put cocaine and start burning it, are you smoking crack?
Technically, you could say that. Well, the thing is with crack is it gets cut. It gets cut with a certain other chemical, so it's a lot cheaper to produce. But
is this triggering you?
No, not at all. No.
It's triggering me, and I'm not even a coke addict.
Well, you know, it was...
explain. So you said they add chemicals to the coke to make it crack.
Yeah, they add chemicals, and I think they stamp it out. There's a process. I really didn't care too much. I just knew to get a cap. Like, you go
and
you
buy...
A cap, it was these little clear vials, and they would have these little crack rocks in it. And the rock is what you would put in, and you would smoke.
But weren't you...
See, cocaine's powder.
Right.
Crack's like a rock.
But like crack, didn't you realize people were losing their teeth, their jobs? Like crack was like...
But that wasn't me, man. I was invincible.
But didn't you think about, like, I mean, to me...
No, when you're on a run, man, you don't think about anything.
Was crack back then different than it is now and perceived as different? Because now it's considered like really low end. Like,
you know, it was low end back then, you know, but it was like kind of cool because it had just hit. It was the time. It was like 1989, I think 90, when New Jack City came out, and it was like...
What was the New Jack City influence?
Well, Chris Rock was a crack addict in that movie,
okay,
and that was the whole rise and fall, you know, of like the crack empire. You know, they show like Wesley Snipes and all. Great movie, you know, but it talks about it.
I mean, we were into it. So you were doing crack, and then what else was going on?
Meth, LSD. I mean, there's a whole smorgasbord.
In one day?
What's
the most you were doing in one day?
I mean, that's like, first of all, whatever I say comes out of my mouth could be a possible exaggeration or I don't remember.
But you're sober now.
But I mean, I can tell you, yes, I'm sober now. I could tell you the like a typical day of what I used to like.
I would love
like.
To hear what that's like. And I how mean, old are we talking?
We'll just say I'm 20 years old.
And are you living in a home still?
No. Okay. I'm living in a basement painted with elephants and giraffes and a forest to make it look like Indiana Jones, because that's who I thought I was.
And where is this basement?
Northeast Philadelphia.
In some, you're
a
renting
buddy
it?
Of mine, friend's house. He let me live in the basement.
It was his house, not his mom's house.
No, it was his house.
Okay.
Yeah. He was doing well, so he bought a house. And we would hang out. So pot with everything. Let's get that straight. Because that's like smoking a cigarette. Pot with everything.
Okay. Breakfast, scrambled eggs, and you're doing smoking a joint or a bong?
Joints. Okay. I used to like, you know, the whole ceremony, the ritual of cleaning the pot and then twisting it up into nice joints with his nice cigarette case.
Okay.
And you would just smoke it all the time. Sometimes glass tubes, sometimes bongs, but mostly just a joint.
Okay.
So start off with some pot. Then you go to the bar and you get like a yard of beer.
Which bar?
There was this club called Club Zero downtown. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? It's like zero, like it's not,
X-E-R-O.
It's not compliment.
Yeah, yeah.
I was at a, okay, so what time of day is this now? Are we talking like 11 a.m.?
No, no, no. This is, I'm giving you a night out. Oh, I'm giving you a
okay.
night out.
Okay, got it.
From the beginning, from the day, there's always a wake and bake. And then I would work. I was selling mattresses too, I forgot to tell you. And I did coke all day long. I was in the store by myself waiting for people to come in to buy beds. And I was just...
Were you ever selling the coke to them?
No, 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 no. But people would come in and say, are you high? And I'd say, what are you talking about? Yeah, you know, you must have the wrong guy.
It's funny. In a bed store, do you ever fall asleep while you're working on the mattresses?
Yeah, not on the mattresses, but I've been woken up. Excuse me, can you help me? You know, I've been passed out.
Okay, so you've done your day job.
Done your day job. I go down and I'm smoking pot on the way down. And actually my boss, I remember one time, had lent me his 1972 mint condition Cadillac that I wasn't supposed to drive, but I was driving it all over the place.
Wait, I thought he said he lent it to you.
Just to like go a place here and there and move it or park it. But I was like driving around.
It became your car for the day. It
became my car, you know? Just giant. Now look at me. I'm like 5'5". Right. I'm in a giant Cadillac. Yeah. Driving around, yeah. Right? So I'm smoking weed. Then I get like a couple yards of beer in me.
Okay.
And then a handful of Percocets. And a handful of Percocets is like 6 to 10 Percocets, right? So you take them down and you're drinking the beer.
With the beer, isn't that enough to kill someone?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But, you know, it felt great to me. So then like around 11 o'clock, as I'm really getting tired, you go in the bathroom, you start doing coke because the coke helps you drink more. And I need to be social and I need to be at the bar up and awake and, you know, and then maybe a few more pills and still a pot. And then a little bit later on, 2 a.m. or so, you're heading home or you're going to go eat. But then by the time you get home, you can't calm down because you've had so much coke and your system's wet. So you take some Xanax, some 2.0 Xanax, the big white, you know, we used to call, what would we call them? I forget. Bars. They were okay. Big bars, big white bars. You take about 5 of them.
5.
You get yourself knocked out. And then you wake up 2 days later and you
two
get-
2 days.
2 days, you get messages on your machine. Hey, where are you? You're supposed to work today, sell mattresses. And you're like, oh, make up a lie, you know. And it just keeps going on and going on.
Oh my God. So when did it finally end? Like what? I mean, it ended, how long have you been sober? Just so I want everyone, all of you, to know this, Joey's been sober for years.
All right, I'll tell you. I haven't had a drink or a drug or anything that affects me
since
July 17th, 1993. So I'm sober over 22 years.
Okay, that's fantastic. Okay, yeah. Because I want you guys to know that.
But I had hit a rock bottom. Like, I mean, I was homeless. I was smoking, sniffing, and licking the carpet and trying to get, you know, drink whatever is possible.
Is that really true?
Yes.
That's not an exaggeration.
That's not an exaggeration.
Well, what kind of carpet was it? Shag? Do you remember?
It was in a rental property that I got kicked out of because I didn't pay the rent, and I would sneak back in and, you know, you drop your stuff on the carpet.
You went back to where you'd live because you thought there was some stuff left over?
Of course, yeah.
And you'd go to the area where you'd been doing drugs?
Yeah.
Did you ever find anything?
I don't know, man, but I definitely snorted something up my nose.
So what was the bottom?
Dust. That was no family or friends. My family wanted nothing to
they
do with me.
They said, you're done with us till you get sober?
Yeah, I got caught. I stole a bunch of money.
How much?
I was gonna get, a lot.
More than $1,000? It's a fair question.
Yes.
10,000?
Yeah. Keep going.
20,000?
Keep going.
50,000?
It would
30?
No, it might be a little, maybe between, we'll say between 50 and 75.
Between, from your parents?
No, this is from the place I worked at. Very good friends of mine who trusted me at a job. They hired me at the mattress place. I couldn't control myself. I was robbing Peter to pay Paul.
So what happened? You could have gone to prison for that.
While I was facing jail time. Yes, they were going to send me to jail. Yeah.
And why did they not?
They found out I was sober and I went in and I talked to them and we talked about making some type of restitution. And I had gotten a lawyer to help me out. I was scared to death because I had been sober.
Or they were threatening to?
They definitely called the law. They didn't have the police come in and actually arrest me, but they called the law. And I know there was, you know, some, like they were totally serious.
So this was your bottom. Like, explain the very moment of that bottom. I'm getting the situation, but was
the very bottom was... I had gotten called into that office and they told me that you're going to jail because you embezzled. My family had kicked me out. They wanted nothing to do with me. I had nobody to call. I had nowhere to go. And I was walking in the street and I just said, I don't know how I got here. I was a nice kid. What happened to me? Do I have a family curse? Because that's what, you know, the Jewish people, they always, you know, there's a curse. And I didn't know what was wrong. And I ran into a guy who I used to smoke crack with. And he told me, he said, dude, you need to get help. And I didn't know, I had too much pride. And I don't know if this is part of being an addict, but I don't know how to ask for help. And I don't know how to say I don't know. But I said, maybe you're right. But I was afraid to go for help. So this kid called his mother, and his mother helped me get the help I needed.
What's that kid's name?
Matt.
Is he still a close friend?
I want to say yes, but unfortunately, Matt hit some circumstances. And I could probably talk about it. Matt, he was clean at the time, but then he actually robbed an off-duty police officer with an unregistered weapon with crack cocaine on him in a school zone in Camden, New Jersey. He's still in jail. Probation is 25 years.
Jeez.
So I love that guy. That guy saved my life, but he's in there. I have not, I wrote him a few letters and stuff. I don't know if he ever got them or not. You know, I don't know. You
boy,
know,
if you ever go see him, that'd be an amazing thing for us to come join you.
Yeah.
It would be a big trip for the show.
Yeah. I think about him a lot, you know, but there's this expression I've heard called seconds and inches, where you're seconds away or inches away from dying or, you know, ending up in jail or something. And I think about Matt all the time, you know? It's just...
Do you feel that you would come close beyond... Besides
I was in... there's so many times, Vic, I could tell you, I don't know how I got out of it.
Did you ever have a gun put to your head?
Yeah, I had... On Halloween, I went into a crack house dressed as Indiana Jones.
Of course.
It was Halloween.
Your hero.
Yeah, I went in there to buy some crack. And three guys pulled guns out on me because they saw my fake holster. They thought I was a police. Mm. And I was like, no. And the guy looked at him and I said, no, you don't know. And next thing you know, the guy saying, oh, wait, we know him. That's, you know, what's his name? He comes here all the time. And I said, yeah, I'm just dressed. It's Halloween. Dun, 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 dun. And they were like laughing. They gave me a free... Got a free pack.
That was close.
Very close.
You're like
close.
A little clown, little monkey performing.
Yeah.
So you don't get shot.
But I wasn't into like super violence or anything. But you know, some of the, where I wound up in some of the neighborhoods and
what
situations.
What neighborhood was that where that was going on?
That was right near Temple University in North Philly.
Is that a rough area?
Yeah, it's pretty, like on the outside, it, like they show Temple what a great school it is and all, but on the outside, like there's crack houses there. There's all, you can get anything you want.
Did you get off on that energy?
I loved it. I loved copping. Like I love like riding. I like being going into the house, not knowing.
Because there's an adrenaline rush of not knowing what's going to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
that's part of the addiction.
Absolutely. Right. I get fired up. And I get fired up as I'm leaving because I'm afraid of running out and I want to do it again. You know, so I was addicted to copping.
What's copping? Getting the stuff?
Getting the stuff. Yeah.
Okay. And so what day was that when you were called into the mattress store? And you said that was the day you hit bottom. Do you remember the date?
I don't remember the date, but it had to be somewhere like in mid to late June of 93.
Do you talk to those people anymore?
I do, actually. I speak to the one of the guy. He's an owner. I do speak with
you
him.
You made amends?
Yes.
Your restitution, all that money?
We worked it out another way.
Okay.
They were very gracious to me.
He's got 3,000 David Bowie pieces of art in his mattress store.
They were very glad that I was sober.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
glad.
They were, they saved your life.
Yeah,
really.
They did.
Because I don't
think
it would have happened in prison.
No, I would not have been good in prison at all. Not at all.
So that began the rise up.
Yes.
From the ashes. So
yes, the Phoenix Rising saga.
So you start going to some kind of rehabilitation and recovery.
Yeah,
I'd
go to
meetings.
I'd go to rooms.
Rooms and then
meet people. Yeah,
okay. We're being general.
Yes,
but the point is you got some help.
I got some help, and that help you can find in the phone book. It's the first letter, the alphabet. We'll say that
the first letter.
And I stayed, and I never left.
You've got that many addictions.
Right.
Like, where do you start? Like, is it the alcohol? Is it the coke? Because there's like different programs for different
things. You just start with whatever's killing you the fastest.
And for me, that
was drugs and alcohol. And I needed to give that up before I could do anything else.
Okay. Because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're in a program for getting sober with alcohol, part of that sobriety is no drugs of any kind.
The program that I know of, yes.
That covers it.
Covers it all.
Yeah,
I mean, it's all the same anyway. you know, when you look at it, it's just about escape, you know, right. So it doesn't matter what you use.
Did your dad, so your dad never got to see you sober?
No, he didn't.
And do you think about that ever? And,
yes.
And what do you think about when you think about
that? That's one of the big regrets I have in my life. The one of the things that, you know, if I could hit the rewind button and change, I would. You know, I went to his gravesite. I made amends as best as I could. But, you know, he's never going to see me sober.
Well, you don't know what he sees. I mean, we don't know what happens.
Yeah,
of course. I know what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just the reality of addiction.
Right.
I mean, you know, people can make it sound, you know, we can dress it up and talk about how wonderful being sober is, because it is, but it's a lie to believe that there's not a loss.
No.
I mean, there's a cost.
Yeah, I mean, there was friendships, there was trust, there was lives, there's all that stuff. I mean, yeah, I don't regret any of the past and stuff like that, and I move on. But yeah, I mean, that you just asked me that, that's still near and dear to my heart.
I see you're getting emotional.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, my dad was my best friend. I love my father. You know,
well, also, you know, you have a bit of a romantic tale in that your dad was a painter. You know,
I swore I would never do what he did. And I wind up, it was a great skill to learn because, you know, I can paint a room or a house.
Was
fast,
he encouraging?
Man. Yeah, he was cool. He supported anything that I did. He was great. Like if I remember, and he worked his ass off. If I needed art supplies, he made sure I had them. Comic books, he made sure I had them. BMX bike, I had it. Like, he was the man. He was totally cool.
Beyond getting beat up and being smaller than the other kids, what if you could pin it down to a few things that have been perhaps like the catalyst or the problem that drove you into addiction? Are there some other things that now you know, being sober all these years, you look back on, and or some things about just yourself that make you realize that there were other things involved? Any introspection or discoveries?
That's pretty deep. I mean, there's a lot, but the common problem that it always goes back to is me. You know, everything circles around me. I can't say that the circumstances made me an addict. I never asked for help. I didn't know what to do, you know, with these feelings. You know, it's tough being a kid.
It's tough.
It's really tough.
It's tough being human.
It's tough. Exactly. It's tough fitting in. So I don't know if one thing, I don't know how it started.
Were your parents addicts?
No, doesn't run in the family. I mean, there's a little bit of insanity, but you know, that comes along with any family, but I had a good family. You know, everything was all right.
Your parents abusive? Your mom abusive? Were you beaten up? Were you emotionally attacked?
Emotionally, I could say, you know, like my mother, you know, she's tough. You know, it's like I always say, anytime I want a shot of low self-esteem, I just call my mother on the phone. You know, she still doesn't know what I do. You know, like if she says, does it come with insurance? You know, like that's like my mother. And I love her, but she's tough. But, you know, I would see like other families and I would compare my insides with other families' outsides. Yeah. And it was just, you know.
Never a good.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't know what led to it, you know.
And eventually, in some ways, it doesn't matter.
No.
Because if you're trying to get sober, and I know you've been sober years.
Right.
Again, how many years do we say?
A little bit over 22. Okay.
Now, do you ever feel like you're a little stressed and you're like, God, I'd really love to do a line of coke right now?
Drugs and alcohol for me don't pop up on the web browser when something's not going right. Eating, killing somebody.
When you say killing someone, that's a joke, right?
Yes, that's a joke. So that's why I have the paper. That's why I draw it out on the paper because, okay. You know, when I get aggravated. But, you know, you learn to cope with life skills. And that was the thing. I didn't know how to learn how to cope with life. So,
is there one skill that you could share with us that's been a lifesaver for you?
Well, pause when agitated. You know, if I get an email that's, you know, whatever it could be, that a job didn't come through or whatever, not to immediately act out on that impulse and write, you know, a crazy email back.
Yeah.
And regret sending it.
So you pause,
you breathe, you look down at your feet, take 5 seconds. Here's where I'm at. Let me take a walk. And that's it. It's a huge tool for me because I'm quick, man, to cut somebody down.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you have a second tool? Because that was a good one.
Let's see. Second tool. What else do I use?
I've got one that my dad taught me.
Oh, yeah.
And it's he says he doesn't walk into falling buildings.
Okay.
Because, you know, and this is a great thing when dating, work life.
I have one.
You know, because you can tell when the situation is just not right.
Well, that's...
And that's a falling building.
Or don't paint a red flag white.
Yeah, that's good. Is that the one you were just going to say?
After you said that, yeah. I'm like, you just hit me with a lot. So I'm not thinking of all the tools that I use every day.
Right.
You know, I mean, I also write a gratitude list every day.
I do too.
Yeah. You know, because
What else do you do as your system to keep yourself sane?
Well, I write a gratitude list every day, you know, because I don't want to forget where I came from and I want to be grateful, you know, like, I mean, I'm walking around, I'm doing a podcast with Vic Cohen. Like,
exactly.
Grateful, right? And I'll write out, like, if I have any resentments towards people. Mm-hmm. But I also, like, will write down in my journal my solution to help better that situation. And I tend to write down my list of fears of what I'm afraid of, because I think when I write it down, it sort of takes it away from me. And I draw it out, too. And then, you know, I try to do 5 good things for myself each
day. Every day.
Every day.
Now, besides coming here, what would be something else you've done today?
Try to eat properly.
Mm-hmm.
I try to exercise, maybe get a walk in.
Okay.
Spend some time in my studio uninterrupted.
Where's your studio? What part of town?
I'd
love to see it. That's
No. It's sort of like, they don't really have a name for it. It's like called Beverly Grove. You know, it's like between Beverly Hills, West Hollywood, and L.A.
Okay.
It's like this crazy section.
So for me, I make a list of 10 things I'm grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
I write 10 affirmations.
Oh, good.
And I read this in that there have been studies done. And guys, you can do this at home. I mean, this is great for anyone.
My girlfriend has me doing affirmations.
Yeah, and
too.
The thing about it is, if it's not I'm a nice guy or I'm a great, you know, I have nieces and nephews, so I might write I'm a really good uncle.
Mm-hmm.
They found that it's better to write in third person. Vic is a really good uncle.
Oh yeah.
Vic is a nice man.
I can't do that.
No, you can.
No.
Try it.
You give me an affirmation right now?
I'm telling you that it would be really, I'm not telling you to do the affirmation now, but when you're writing it out, do it in the third person and you'll
get this, like, when the third person, it's like, I start thinking of a certain politician who refers to himself and I'm like, I'm not there. I'm not
just
a third person.
Just don't think about it. This is not anything about that. And then I do a meditation, mindful meditation.
Yeah, meditation helps tremendously.
There's something from YouTube I listen to. And then I do a hypnosis from YouTube. That's every day. It's a 30-minute
hypnosis.
When
do you have time to do the podcast?
And then I come here.
Yeah, right.
No, you can do this in an hour,
sure,
all of this.
Sure.
It's quick.
Yeah.
And the affirmations on that take 2 minutes, literally. So what's the future looking like for you now? You've got, do you have a show coming up? I believe you have a big art show. Isn't that right?
It's not a big art show, but it is. It's a solo show. It's happening in March at the GABA Gallery with 3 other artists, 3 solo shows put into one building, which is pretty cool. I'm doing a lot of illustration work, which is primarily my income. Besides the prints, you know, I get hired by magazines and stuff to do drawings and, you know, that's what it is. And, you know, you never know what's going to come through.
It is, you know, regarding the addiction area that we've been discussing, mm-hmm. is there anything that we didn't cover that you really feel like you'd like to share? Because I think your story is, you know, just so special and just... It's a story of real recovery. I mean, you were truly living your vision of your life in a sober way.
Well, I appreciate that.
And, you know, this is a big turnaround.
Right. Now, to me, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do, you know, and to still do it consistently. I'm not a consistent person. So for me to do it for this long is amazing. I do, though, want to be humble. I want to be a worker among workers. There's millions of stories like mine out there. And I think, you know, what I get out of it is don't be afraid to ask for help. Anybody, you know?
And any kind of help. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be on addiction.
For me, and you know, talk about affirmations and empowerment, when I ask people for help, whether in my industry, art, whatever it is, pens, I always ask for help.
What do you mean pens?
I have a pen addiction.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Fountain pens and other types. Actually, this weekend is the LA Pen Show, and I'm meeting all my online pen friends there.
Okay.
So very exciting.
Good. See, you went from your crackhead friends to your pen friends.
Yeah. So now I'm up late at night.
Geeks.
Emailing, talking about broad nibs.
Why are you turning me on?
Right. Yes.
Okay. So get help. That would be...
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I had this idea that maybe you would draw me. And I don't know, can you do it in, like, we've got about 5 minutes.
Yeah, let's see what we can do here.
But while you're doing it, can I just talk with you?
I think, let me see if I could do two things at once.
Okay. And the reason
No guarantee.
The reason I want you to do me is because I know how famous you are going to be.
Okay.
And I'm never, you know.
Well, I'm going to charge you for this.
No, you're not.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm just, you know, I'm just thinking about the investments. And, you know, I had one, Joey Feldman. That's what this is.
Joey Feldman. A lot of people say my name is one word.
Now, what about the idea that Jewish people aren't addicts? Did you ever hear that? Like, they're not drinkers. Like, yeah, was that ever anything that stopped you from getting help?
Yeah, that's a lie.
Yeah. But that's such an absurd idea.
I mean, that's crazy. Addiction runs rampant anywhere. It doesn't, you know... It doesn't take any hostage. It takes tons of prisoners. It doesn't matter what religion, what color you are. It doesn't matter.
So I'm not looking at what you're drawing.
Okay.
But when you do these kind of, I don't know if they're like portraits, but when you're doing a personality, are you using a photo or just your mind to what you imagine they would look like?
No, I like to base stuff off of feelings and, you know, off of the character of what they're about in the world. But I will print out a few pictures, or I'll go and get, you know, some reference. You have to have reference. I can't just, you know, but I try to get different angles. But I don't trace. I don't do a stencil.
What you're doing now, like, are you basing it on our relationship over these 7 years? Is it part of
I'm doing right now is you just said, hey, can you draw a picture?
I know. It's
so
really,
I'm pretending I'm in a coffee shop and I'm drawing you and I'm just trying to get your look down right now, quickie. If it was at home and I had some time to spend with you, photos, I mean, I would draw you out, you know?
So if I were to talk to the Joey Feldman who's sitting or standing in that mattress shop, probably demoralized, and show him photos of you today, mm-hmm. you're doing this podcast, you're selling your art, you've got a beautiful woman in your life who, when we talked earlier, means a lot to you.
Yep.
You're living a life of integrity. You're not stealing. You're not living in fear.
Well, some days I live in fear.
But not in a way that's destroying you. Uh-uh. Right? What would this be something that would be unimaginable or?
Yeah. I mean, this definitely wasn't on, you know, I didn't think that this is how I would wind up. I thought I'd either be dead. You know, I just was not thinking of it at all, how I would wind up.
And do you ever just pinch yourself today and go, how did this happen?
Yes. I love my life.
It's kind of, what's interesting to me is it's the inverse or maybe the converse of at 19 or whatever you were when you were in that mattress shop and going, how did I get here? Or when you left.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that your life was just in shambles. Here your life is completely the opposite. And the question is now, the same.
How did I get here?
And through a lot of hard work.
A lot of hard work, a lot of, you know, I don't want to say like I believed in myself, but I did. There was something else. And you know, the people around me, like my girlfriend is one of my biggest inspirations. And she, you know, she pushes me on any given day that I don't feel 100%. And you know, the reality of it is I don't know how I got here. All I know is I did the next indicated action. I listened to some suggestions that people gave me, and I didn't give up on myself. And even in my darkest hour, when I moved out here and things weren't going too well, something told me that I could still accomplish something and do what I wanted to do. And I stuck with it, and here I am with you, Vic Cohen.
Who is this woman?
Her name is Maureen.
And how did you meet
Mo? I met her from a friend back in Philly who said, hey, my cousin's out there and you should meet her. So as soon, I called her, we instant messages or something, you know, it's 2010 at the point, moment. And as soon as she heard my Philly accent, she was sold.
That's funny. I usually hear that about a British accent.
Right.
And is she an artist?
She's an actress. Yeah.
Is she a recovered addict?
That's nobody's business, but you'd have to ask her. I don't believe she is.
Okay. And when you say an artist, is she a singer? Is that what you...
When I first met her, she was singing opera. I mean, she's got a hell of a voice on her. And she gave that up recently, and she's pursuing her act.
Is there anything we can see her in?
Not at this moment. There's other stuff. She would kill me if I was talking about her right now, about that, because of her... She's just getting back into it and stuff.
Isn't this, not to be over the top, too flowery here, but isn't that one of the gifts of recovery? I mean, in other words, if you were in your addiction, my feeling is if one's in an addiction, they already have a relationship. It's with that addiction. There's no room for another person.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And
if your addiction is your lover, it's your, you know, it's your partner. It's everything. So, yeah.
So this is one of the gifts of that you're giving yourself, or that she's giving you.
What that
of your recovery?
Yeah,
to have this relationship.
Yes, she's definitely a gift of recovery, and I love her more than anything. And we have two cats.
Nice. And make sure you sign it.
I will.
God, that's where all the money is. This is great. Believe it or not, he's finished. And before you show it to me, I want you to show it to the camera like you did before. Thank you so much.
Kinda, I got you with your headphones on.
Cool.
Your little hat. But it's kind of like a young, innocent Vic.
Good. Oh, and you're putting, he's not done. He's putting the final touches.
Try to give you a little bit of stubble.
There is some stubble there.
Yeah, you got a little bit of stubble.
Yeah, this is great. I'm going to frame this.
But you sort of had this grin. I don't know.
That's good. That's great. I mean, I'm seeing it upside down, but let's show it to the camera. This is Joey's work. That's me. Well done. That's great. I'm going to, Jeremy, if you can take this camera here. Thank you. Whoop. Wait, there we go. Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. It's really cool. I'm going to frame this. Do you think, though, that it's too like an egomaniac for me to have a picture of myself framed?
No. Because it's got a little bit of likeness. It's a little bit of evil.
It has a little bit of the shadow, my shadow. We all have a shadow, right?
Yes.
We all have a dark side.
Yes.
I love it. I really do. This is fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's great. Thanks, Joey. That's great. I'm really touched.
You got it.
We're out of time. Again, if you want to find Joey, it's Joey Feldman, JoeyFeldman.com. Please subscribe on iTunes to Vic Cohn's It's a Fair Question. Also, you can give me a review. I would love a review, only if it's 5 stars, please. And we've got like over 60 episodes to listen to. We've got tons of stuff. You're going to love it, I promise. And Joey, we're done.
Great.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
That
was awesome.
Pleasure.
Thank you. And thanks again, all of you. We'll see you soon.
I'm Vic Cohn, and it's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohn, and it's a fair question. It's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohn, and it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair, it's a fair question.